This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In the spring of 2010, several individuals in the Centre for Equality Rights and Accommodation filed a landmark legal challenge at the Ontario Supreme Court. The Right to Housing Challenge argues that the governments of Canada and Ontario are in violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms for their failure to address and their contribution to the growing crisis of homelessness and inadequate housing. Almost 10,000 pages of expert witness evidence were submitted to support this case on National Housing Day in the fall of 2011. The governments of Canada and Ontario have responded by seeking to have the case struck before the evidence can be heard by a judge. On May 27th and 28th, 2013, Faye Faraday, Peter Rosenthal, and the Advocacy Centre for Tenants Ontario argued in court that the case must proceed. We're joined on the phone by Tracy Heffernan, a program director at Advocacy Centre for Tenants Ontario.
Welcome back to People First Radio, Tracy.
Thanks very much.
Give us a brief background on this case. It dates back to 2010. How and why was it started?
So 2010 is when we actually put the government on notice that we would be bringing a legal action against them. But we actually had, there was a coalition of people and organizations that had come together, people who had experienced homelessness, academics, lawyers, community activists, and for about a year and a half, we actually talked about whether or not we would have a legal action against the government. And once we decided that we did and that we had a basis in law, we brought the case forward.
Seems a basic question that's being asked in all of this is whether housing is a right or perhaps a privilege. And I'm wondering if you could give us a sense of how the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms relates to this case.
I guess what we're arguing is that actually housing is a basic necessity of life. And I think anyone in Canada thinking about that question would probably agree that it is a basic necessity and that without a home, it's very difficult to ensure that one's children get educated or that you can work, engage in your community, and so on. So with regard to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, there are two sections that we focused on. One is Section 7, which says that everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security in Canada. And Section 15, which says that people have the right not to not be discriminated against. So the reason why we have invoked Section 15 as well is because when you look at who the people are who are homeless or inadequately housed across Canada, the preponderance of them are Aboriginal peoples, they are single mothers, and they are people from racialized communities, they're disabled, they have mental health issues.
Now, the governments of Ontario and Canada have moved to have this case struck. Tell us more about the legal processes, I guess you could say the legal wrangling that's involved in this.
Well, that was a very interesting position, so to speak, for the provincial and federal government to take with regard to the case, because what they did when we put them on notice in May 2010, we gave them a very lengthy document laying out our legal and factual claims. And normally, if you were going to try and strike a case, you would do it at that time. They knew, based on that document, that we would be amassing, as you've noted, what added up to almost 10,000 pages of expert witness evidence. So they waited until we had done that. We served that on them about a year and a half later. And then they waited another 6 months before advising us that they would be bringing a motion to strike. But here's what's interesting about a motion to strike. You can't rely on any evidence. So they've looked at our evidence, and I guess you could draw one of two conclusions. One conclusion would be they looked at our evidence and they really genuinely thought that there was no legal issue, that should be heard at a court. Alternatively, you could conclude that they looked at that evidence by doctors and by academics and by people who have been involved in housing issues in Canada for many, many years. They looked at that evidence and they thought, uh-oh, they actually have a case here. So we're going to try and strike them out. We're going to use our resources to strike them out at this point so that a court will never see that evidence.
Now, Laurie Mons Bratton is a reporter at the Toronto Star, and I'm going to read a couple of sentences from her article of May 26, 2013. She writes, "Government lawyers say the charter does not include a general right to housing or oblige governments to provide social assistance and housing support. Such economic and social policies are political matters beyond the scope of the court," they argue in their motion to quash before the Ontario Superior Court. "It is plain and obvious this application will fail," they conclude. So it sounds to me as though the government lawyers are saying your application, being the application from the people that need the housing, is going to fail. What do you say about that?
Yeah, well, that is exactly the position that they're taking. And they have also taken the position that this is a political issue. In court, it was referred to as an unfortunate social problem. But what's interesting about the lack of affordable housing and homelessness in Canada, which you may have noted when the Federation of Municipalities was meeting in Vancouver last week, that was top on the mayor's agenda, lack of affordable housing, crisis and homelessness in municipalities across Canada. But when you look at that, what the government is saying is we have no positive obligation to provide this to people. But what one of the arguments that we're making is that by the actions that you're taking, so I'm going to give you an example from Ontario. In 1998, the provincial government said, we are going to get rid of rent control in Ontario, and they did that. So it meant that if a new tenant was moving into an apartment, the landlord could put the rent to whatever the market could bear, as they called it. What that meant is that from 1998 on, what we've seen across Ontario is a massive reduction in any kind of affordable housing in the province, which has impacted on people who are on social assistance, but also the working poor across Ontario, because they simply cannot afford the housing that exists. So we would say the government is taking specific actions, and by those actions, they are creating a crisis. And that crisis puts them in violation of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Now, Yutaka Dirks is also with the Advocacy Centre for Tenants Ontario, as well as you. He's quoted in the Toronto Star as saying that governments are increasingly using procedural motions like the one we've been talking about to delay or prevent charter cases by marginalized groups from moving forward, making this case, and this is what Yutaka says, making this case that much more important. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there is some evidence that using this, what we would see as a pretty heavy-handed legal process, this motion to strike, that it is a way, and also waiting until we had amassed all that evidence. I mean, we're working on a shoestring budget, and we have many, many volunteers working on the case, including lawyers who are working for free on it because they believe in the issue. So it's pretty interesting that the governments who really are, you know, they're supposed to have the public interest. That's what they're supposed to be looking at. It shouldn't be ideological. It's the public interest. So the fact that they would say, we don't even want this case to be heard in the court, and therefore we're going to bring this motion to strike, and the amount of resources that subsequently we've had to put into fighting that motion is pretty substantial. And it is quite disturbing that poor people, essentially, are not being given a voice in the court. Our own government is trying to stop that.
What happened then on May the 27th and 28th, 2013?
So on May 27th and 28th, and actually we went into the 29th as well, so it was three full days of hearing. The Attorney Generals of Ontario and Canada made arguments about why this case should not be heard, and why the court should never have the opportunity to look at the evidence which they have already gone through. We, of course, responded saying, of course this should be heard. The test, as you noted earlier, is that the government has to show that it's plain and obvious that there's no legal action that could be heard. And so, of course, we were responding saying, of course there's a legal action. We need to look at the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and we provided all of our arguments. But in addition, you might be interested to know, because there are groups from British Columbia involved as well, there were three sets of interveners who came forward to argue different positions, but all of them supported the idea that the case should be able to proceed. So two of the groups from British Columbia who were involved are Pivot Legal Society in Vancouver, and Justice for Girls, also based in Vancouver.
Now, Tracy, what happens next with this case, and what kind of a timeline are we looking at?
Well, the judge indicated that he probably wouldn't have a decision until the fall of 2013. At that point, we'll look at the decision. If the government has been unsuccessful in striking the application, then we will proceed. At that point, they'll need to provide their evidence, and at some point, probably in a couple of years, it will get set down for a hearing. If the government has succeeded, then we will look carefully at the decision and decide at that point whether or not we're going to appeal it. Now, the government could also appeal it, so if they're not successful, they may appeal it. What this means is that even more legal and community resources are going to be invested in fighting just to have the case heard.
Tracy Heffernan, thanks very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
Thanks very much.
Tracy Heffernan is a program director at the Advocacy Center for Tenants Ontario. You can find ACTO online at acto.ca. That's acto.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.